I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome. This is Barrel It Up, and I'm your host, J.J. Ambrone. We are the podcast that focuses on those that continue playing sports long after others have retired. Today, we're going to get a new perspective on that. Usually, we're talking to those that play the games. However, we've been ignoring those that officiate the games. To help with that is Dan Huey. He has run an officiating company for many decades. And Dan, welcome to the show.
Pleased to be here.
And how long have you had your own organization for officiating?
Actually, since 1973. So we've been around, coming up in 53 years.
Holy cow. And what's the name of it?
Mid-County Officials Network.
Okay. And we'll do, for everybody that's listening and watching, we'll do a link to that if people want to find out more, because a lot of people that have been on the show have been, I'm sure, officiated by your organization, because I've talked to a lot of people up on the Bay Area, north of the Bay Area, on the show and everything, so they'll all recognize your organization and undoubtedly you at some point along the way and all that. And I think you told me how many different sports. Can you tell our listeners what the sports are that you officiate?
Yeah, so we service baseball, basketball, flag football, football, soccer, softball, and volleyball.
Good gracious.
Pretty much from elementary up to the high school level. Mm-hmm. In the past, we've done college softball, and we've done a lot of adult league baseball in the past.
Yeah. How big an area do you cover?
For high school, let's see, we're in Contra Costa County, Alameda County, Marin County, a little bit of Marin, Sonoma, and Napa.
Gotcha. That's a pretty big area. How many people do you think?
Yeah, 90% of our area is all Contra Costa and Alameda County.
Yeah.
There are a few schools up in Solano, only one school in Napa County.
How big a roster of people do you have to work with?
That's one of the major issues. Not nearly enough.
There's
an extreme dearth of sports officials, all level, all sports.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a subject in the second part of our talk today that we'll get into a lot of detail with. And matter of fact, you know, we'll kind of go through each of the sports and what your official, you know, in a lot of detail about what kind of people you're looking for, what they need to know, how do they need to be trained, and where the gaps are. We'll get into a lot of that in the second part of this. But right now, I'm going to take you all the way back to the very beginning. And what was your first sport?
First sport that I officiated was baseball. I was 13 years old and pretty much got recruited. I guess no umpire showed up for this game. And my friends and I, we were bums at the local neighborhood park, Nickel Park in Richmond.
Uh-huh.
And we were just playing sandlot baseball, and there was the dad's club league. It's like CYO, the parochial schools, like St. Cornelius and St. Paul's were playing, you know, baseball six way. There were no umpires. So they asked my friend and I if we wanted to umpire. We did it and enjoyed it. And from that point on, it's been a lifetime love.
Yeah. Were you the home plate umpire in that game?
No, I was the first base umpire. And I always like to add that the first play of the game, kid from St. Cornelius bunted.
Uh-huh.
And I had to call at first base, and I called him out, and apparently I missed the call.
Oh.
But I'm here to say that's the first and last call I ever missed.
There you go. Impossible. You had to have it right. That's right.
Right.
Had you just been playing Sandlot stuff before that?
We played organized ball, but our season was over at the time. This was like late May 1964. Yeah. So I was in the eighth grade. So our season was over, but you know, we were whatever was in season.
Yeah.
All my friends, we would just hang out at Nickel Park and just play pickup basketball or football, baseball, whatever was in season.
That's what's missing today, isn't it? These kids.
Man, absolutely. It is so rare now. And that's interesting you say that. Yeah, that's certainly been my observation for a long time. You just don't go by parks and see kids just, you know, playing pickup or sandlot or just hanging out playing ball. It's way different.
Yeah, because I spent 40 years in Orange, 35 years in one house in Orange County until recently. And at the end of the street, there was a park and there was a backstop for, you know, playing baseball over there. And I never saw any kids playing over there. And we would have killed to have a backstop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you remember my song on that.
Yeah. So was baseball your first sport? Was that the first sport you were introduced to as a player?
I believe so, yeah. I believe so, yeah. Baseball was. But again, CYO was, it was West Contra Dad's Club. Uh-huh. All the parochial schools. There were a few public schools that participated, but definitely, I think third grade, they had tryouts down at Nickel Park. And yeah, baseball definitely was the first.
And who introduced you to the game? I know sometimes it's hard for us to go back that far.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember some of my first coaches, John Novascone and John Mirator. They were coaching us at St. Cornelius. I can remember my first memory of hitting a ball. And I was surprised I hit it. We were just, I want to say I may have been 5 years old, and a neighborhood kid just threw, you know, I had a bat and just threw a ball at me, you know, maybe 15 feet away. And
yeah.
I swung I was amazed. And it's amazing that I can think back at age five and recall that. But
yeah.
Yeah, I said, wow, I hit the ball. And then across the street near us where we lived on South 19th Street, there was an elementary school called Coronado. And they had an after-school program, so you go there and just play pickup softball and baseball. And,
yeah.
I would think that was my first introduction to it.
I'm just amazed that you remember coaches' names from that time. They had to have a big influence on you then.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. They did. Yeah.
Were they like X's and O's coaches or attitude coaches or?
I don't know about X's and O's, but they definitely taught us some fundamentals and they gave us the opportunity to play.
Yeah.
And often it was almost like through officiating, very much like it too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can do so much training and try to develop an official or a ball player, but you're going to learn, you know, ball out there sometimes on the job, both as a player and,
yeah,
you know, as an official.
Yeah. How long did you continue as a player in baseball?
Sure. Yeah, in baseball, I played all through high school at Salesian High School. Did not play in community college, but I went to SF State. I played fall ball over there. Played some summer ball after high school with Legion, American Legion, and Connie Mack. And then I got my teaching credential, and I moved to St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh wow!
And I was a teacher there, but they had a community tryout for the St. Louis Cardinals. So I had some references for the, from San Francisco coaches. So, you know, I got a tryout back in 1974. And, you know, I made it through the camp, but at that time I was a pitcher, and I was a submarine pitcher, pitched submarine ball. And, you know, they were impressed with it, but, the fallback was I did not have, major league caliber arm as far as speed. I can have the ball drop and rise. But in that camp, Kerry Kennedy was signed by the Cardinals in that camp.
Wow.
He went on to play with the Cardinals, Cubs, and I believe he ended his career with the Giants. And then they also signed Ken and Cleet Boyer were big names back then.
Yeah.
Ken Boyer's son, David, they signed him. He never made it to the bigs. I think he made it to double or triple A.
Wow.
Those couple of the names they signed out of that camp.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing because a lot of those camps, they might get a couple of minor leaguers to fill in some spots out of those camps.
Yeah.
So, your high school, was that a successful program that you pitched for? Or?
Yeah. Well, I did very little pitching at Salesian. I was mainly an infielder. My senior year was a shortstop.
Oh, there you go.
I did a little pitching. We did a combined. I remember pitching my partner and I, Robin Arrieta and myself. We pitched a combined perfect game against De La Salle.
Oh, wow.
Back in 1968. But they were a new school then. It may have been their first year of varsity baseball. I think their school opened in 66.
Uh-huh.
So they were pretty new. And like I said, I think it could have been their first varsity program.
Wow. But even so, that's still impressive that you, for any sport you're against.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, and just a great memory and just great experience.
Now, were you, during that time up through high school and everything, were you playing any other sports or just baseball?
Playing football in high school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I played football. So in high school, I played football and baseball.
What position in football?
Well, my first couple of years, I was a little heavier. So I was interior lineman on offense, and then I was a linebacker on defense. And then my senior year, I was a wingback on offense, and played cornerback on defense.
Wow, so you'd lost some weight, or?
Intentionally lost some weight. You know, I got into the girls,
I
started liking girls, and.
The girls always like the football players, that's right.
Yeah, right, sorry.
How were those coaches? Were they memorable people?
I'm sorry?
Were those coaches memorable guys also, or the football coaches?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, my first coach, Jerry Lutie. Salesian, my freshman year. Yeah, made a big impact. Probably the most influential coach I had all in football.
Wow.
Jerry Lutie, yeah.
What was, because in those days we didn't have 15 different coaches for high school football.
Mm-mm.
So did you have that senior year, did you have a backs coach or was it just a defensive coach?
I believe we had. I can remember two coaches for football on our team that year. I think we just had a head coach and an assistant coach.
Yeah. What was there anything that you learned from those guys that was like lasting things that you've kept with you all the years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the assistant coach for football was Tom Giacomini.
Mm-hmm.
He was also our varsity baseball coach too.
Oh, wow.
I was probably closer to him because I played baseball. I'm drawing a blank on our head coach. But we had a big victory and we played Napa. At that time, Napa was the fourth ranked team in the state. And we went up to Napa, played in their stadium, and we upset them 14-12. It was really a big deal at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And they're good fundamentals. Again, that's the same kind of question. Fundamentals guys or attitude guys?
you know, being in a parochial school, I mean, discipline is already almost like built in.
Yeah.
If you don't have discipline and certainly positive conduct of deportment, mm-hmm. you know, you're not really going to be a student there very long. So that's kind of built in. They definitely taught us the game, you know. I'm feeling bad. I can't remember the
game. It's rare that anybody can remember all those. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I suppose at a parochial school, grades were extremely important in order to be able to get on the field.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I know that there's in California, there's football schools. I won't mention names, but there's football schools where if somebody misbehaves or is not doing grades, they send them over to the continuation kind of school to get their grades and that, but that keeps them eligible to play. And of course, that wouldn't have happened in a parochial school.
No, that didn't happen.
Did you have any malcontents that had to be dealt with or?
On the football team or?
Yeah.
There was not so much grade problems, but there was very little tolerance for, you know, messing up or, you know, anti-social behavior. There's very little tolerance. I know, you know, near graduation, a couple of, you know, 3 or 4 year students at Salesian weren't allowed to graduate over, whatever type of behavior issues that maybe they were accused of.
Yeah, I guess when you're getting to be a senior and you're on the baseball team, I don't know. I know in Michigan that in a lot of baseball throughout the country, the baseball program overlaps graduation, and so it's always a possibility. Probably not too much at a parochial school that those last couple of weeks before the season's over, people are going to graduate and start to misbehave a little bit and, you know, that sort of thing. I don't know if that happened in parochial schools.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, talking about family, I know you have a younger brother, Michael, that I know and have interviewed here before and everything. Were you able to kind of bring him along in sports and, you know, was he a good student of his big brother?
Right. Well, Mike was a late bloomer. Mike had other interests. I mean, Mike played, you know, elementary ball and maybe middle school at St. Cornelius. Then he transferred to a public school, I think, his eighth grade.
Oh, wow.
So he kind of went in a different direction than my brother Jim and I. We stayed with the sports, you know, through high school and participated. Mike didn't play any high school sports. He went to John F. Kennedy in Richmond. He didn't play any sports. He enjoyed sports, but his interests were elsewhere.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he may have gotten into that before some of his interests that he had other than sports in high school, but he didn't participate in any high school sports.
And then your other brother, was he close in age to you? Were you close in?
Yeah, we're all 2 years apart.
Oh, okay.
Older brother Jen, 2 years older. I'm in the middle. And then my brother Mike is 2 years younger. And then we have a sister.
Then Jim, was Jim an influence on you as you was going through sports?
Yeah, absolutely. Probably more than anyone in my life. Yeah, he was a great athlete. He was a fullback on the football team. They had an undefeated team in the EBAO in 1964.
Oh.
He was on that team. I know when they kept shot put records, he was a track and fields guy. He definitely had the shot put record at Salesian.
Wow.
He still made. I officiate there quite a bit. In fact, I officiate there tomorrow at Salesian. And they used to have all the records. They took them down a while back. I'm not sure if that still exists.
Yeah, geez.
Yeah.
Now, did you ever get to play on the same team with him during all those years?
Not in high school, no.
No, that's too bad.
Yeah. He was a senior and I was a sophomore, so I was playing JVs. And
Yeah.
He was on the varsity.
Did you feel like you had to prove yourself being behind him? You know, were you that kind of brother thing?
Yeah. Well, I idolized him. I wanted his number. I remember my freshman year in football, my freshman year, you know, they're at, you could ask for numbers depending on what position you were playing. So he was number 46. I wanted him to be 46. And Coach Gene Albo, he said, "Hey, you know, I get what you're saying, but, you know, you got to make your own name. Make your own name."
Brother,
idolized him. He's had a, you know, he's had a great career here. He's got a great reputation. But, you know, make your own name. So
now, did he continue?
Wore number 40.
Did he continue on, you know, after high school and college and stuff?
Not in sports. He went up to Oregon for chiropractic college and had a career in chiropractic.
Yeah, because in those days, you know, even though you gave it a shot, in those days, financially, it wasn't the best option to try and become a professional baseball player.
No, right, yeah. right. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, it was a big deal. And I think it was 1965 when Willie Mays, you know, made $100,000.
Yeah.
I made $100,000. That was a big deal. And I remember him making one of his classic shoestring catches with his, with the basket, you know, with the basket glove. And it was a big photo of it calling, another $100,000 snag.
Yeah.
You know, by Willie. But yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, he had to work after he retired.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. You know, like tomorrow I'm going to be talking to somebody I've known since I started in senior baseball, like 39 years. And he was telling me the other day that their daily food allowance early 80s, was $7.50 a day, and their salary was $700 a month in the minor leagues, you know, in Class A ball. So that's even into the 80s. People don't realize that this is a very recent phenomenon for baseball players, that they can survive without another job. How about parents? Were they involved in you, all three of you?
Yeah. Mom, you know, dad was working all the time.
Yeah.
Supporting the family. Dad, dad came out when he could. Not, it wasn't frequent, but dad did when he could. But yeah, mom, you know, like whatever they talked about, the soccer mom. She was the sports mom that brought us, you know, all the games and brought the team to the game. Not just us, but, you know, she
had
all the other players, and they'd have a carpool going and picking my life, and
Now, did she behave herself on the sidelines? Was she?
Oh, yeah. She is. Her etiquette was exceptional. And I mean, she rooted for us, but, you know, she never criticized us or criticized the umpires.
Now, when dad would show up on those occasions that he showed up, was he, you know, some dads grab the son at the end of the game and holler at him about this or that, or
no. He had little influence. He wasn't a sports guy. Mom was a sports person. Mom played, you know, there was no organized girls softball, but they called it GAA, Girls Athletic Association.
Yeah,
it was more like pickup.
Yeah,
it wasn't organized like it is now.
I
mean, title since 1976, but. In 1940, she played sports.
Uh-huh.
It was under the realm of, you know, girls athletically and over at But she enjoyed it. That's, you know, we definitely had an influence from her, and she loved sports. And dad was kind of indifferent to sports.
Wow, that's interesting. Because it's usually the dads that are kind of pushing things along. And
My dad was a lefty. I could remember a couple of times out in front of the house, we played catch and stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, we were more advanced than him as a player. I mean, we could, catch better than that.
Yeah.
He could throw better. Yeah. So he wasn't, a real sports guy.
Gotcha. We've got a lot more to talk to Dan about. We got to get into officiating and a lot of nitty gritty stuff in officiating. And we're going to do that in a second show with Dan. So right now we're going to do my little housekeeping stuff that I have to do and finish this podcast. But be sure that we're going to talk about all the nitty gritty, like I say, with Dan in the next one. So I want to thank everybody for listening or watching Barrel It Up. Please subscribe to the channel. As you hear from every podcast, it does really help everybody grow to have subscribers. Also, there's a rating system, 1 to 5. 5 is the best. And so be gentle, please. You can leave comments at barrelitup@yahoo.com. Don't worry about spelling that. That'll be in the description. We'd love to hear from you. If there's someone I should be talking to that you think, please give me their information, who, why, and how to get in touch with them. And if you'd like to see a complete list of everybody that we've had on the show and everybody that's going to be coming up shortly on the show, you can see that at jjambrone.com on page 5. That's also going to be in the description. So don't worry about that. We'll also have the contact information for Dan's organization in there. So you don't have to worry about us giving you exact spelling or anything like that right now. There's video clips available now of a lot of the shows on Instagram and Facebook. And I also would like to thank the people that make this show possible. I'd like to thank TJ at Pod Populi. That company does all my editing and distribution. You can get us on Spotify, Apple, any possible combination of podcasts, apps that you can think of. I'd like to thank Susan, my executive producer. Thank Robin, my associate producer. And I would especially like to thank Dan for being on this show. And everybody, be sure to wait around for the next following week when we'll have Dan on and talking about officiating in more detail. Thank you, Dan.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.